Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on Apple Podcasts.
This is Dumpty Dum, a weekly podcast about the archers and the goings-on of Ambridge. I'm Stephen Bowden, the perfect example of a single-cup table hogger.
And I'm Jacqueline Berto, who looks adorable but can be a right aggressive sow.
And then there's you, our lovely Dumpty Dummers, who are queuing up for the Bartleby experience. This week's episodes were written by Caroline Jester, who seems to be queuing us up for an exciting week next week. We have calls this week from Lillian, who's getting a bit fed up with Alistair and Denise.
Marie from Winchester, who heard romantic music this week.
Glynn, who has sussed out the Grundys.
Emma, who is finding some of the characters unbelievable.
Jonah, who has some harsh words for Brian.
Melly, who really feels for Alice after Friday.
Globetrotting Richard, who has thoughts about which Grundy is the most entrepreneurial.
And finally, Gillian, a first-time caller innerer who has a plot prediction for us.
We also have an email from our regular correspondent, Chris, in Indiana. Plus, we have The Week in Ambridge by Suey, a roundup of the Dumpty Dum Facebook group from Rob, and the Tweets of the Week from Theo. But before we start talking too much, let's remind ourselves of what happened over the last 7 days with a roundup of The Week in Ambridge from Suey.
Hello, lovely people. It's Suey here, Queen of Tar, for the lowdown, and it's been very low, on what's been going down this week in Ambridge. Well, it will come as no surprise to many of us that Alice is back drinking, and last week was so not a one-off. Jacob had to rouse her to tell her she'd forgotten what was going on with Martha. She was likely crying her eyes out, as Mummy forgot to tell the nursery that Kate would be picking Martha up. There was a telltale bottle of wine empty, of course. Alice lied and lied about what went on, but somehow Jacob agreed not to tell Kate immediately. Instead, Alice was invited to dinner with Jacob, Kate, Brian and Miranda. She lied her socks off about talking to her buddy Lisa about her having had a drink, who, according to Alice, said, well, at least you're trying. I don't think so. The meal was great, with some impressive vegan cooking from Cade, and they press-ganged Miranda into their pub quiz team for tomorrow night at the ball. Especially subject revenge on ex-husbands, I suspect. Lillian was distinctly unimpressed when they showed up. They had spent a lot of time trying to work out a suitable team name involving martinis. Alice was pissed again. There's a Kel surprise. They had to sit it out with Alice showing them up repeatedly. Miranda did not want any crisps. And then, going home, they were going to really disturb the balance of the teams. Once Lillian tweaked that they were really going home and why they were going home, they were really going home. Alice was fighting all the way. She really is vile when she's been drinking. She dropped Jacob in it with Kate and Brian. Brian was more than upset and chucked Jacob out and said some things that he can never take back. Oh, dearie me, I foresee Alice losing Martha. On a lighter note, Lindy Bottom and Robert were used as pawns. Linda tried to talk Azra into village events after Azra said a few things about pantos of the past that she had heard about. I suspect it will be a long time before we see her at the Flower and Produce Show, and maypoles are right out. Robert was persuaded very gently by Jimus to accept help with his ancient mystery puzzle involving an overnight stay at Ambridge Hall, leaving the coast clear for Alistair and Denise for a spot of How's Your Father while the coast was clear. Alistair asked Denise if she had plans for the evening because he had Green Acres all to himself. So they had a takeaway and two bottles of good wine, courtesy of Jimus, and then she turned him down because of Jimus's slippers. So they have a new plan to reschedule their bunk up for Sunday. That'll be fun. Shell seems a bit of a madam this week, wanting to take the job at the tea room and do a spot of advertising for her mobile hairdressing. Emma got cross with her interrupting her plans for arboreal world domination. She's got new fleeces and t-shirts from Will, which she's going to hide from Ed until there are several miles between the two of them. Chelsea pushed Robert out of the tea room because he hadn't bought any cake and was taking up space. Hugh Emma being unimpressed of Ambridge and saying Robert is a loyal customer. Eddie is doing everything he can to fleece the public into handing over hard cash by advertising Bartleby the Talking Horse, allowing them to take pictures with the pony. George was furious that Eddie is damaging his brand. Eddie then swiped the fortune teller booth from the fate without mentioning to anyone the fate committee and was offering sound advice from Bartleby for a fee, which went up and up during the day, with visitors eventually paying £30 a time for a message. Will attempted to stop the two of them getting into a stand-up fight and George destroying the booth. He was placated a little by getting half the cash, but then Will insisted that he treat Emma. So Will and Emma and George went off to Grey Gables and worked up spending as much as possible. George kicked his fingers at the waiter and then said he wasn't going to leave a tip. We have established that the portions are more nouveau than hearty. So, I think that's enough for this week. I hope roll on the next one. I hope it's a good one.
Thank you for that, Zoe. So, Jacqueline, how was your week?
Well, part of it was spent travelling, another part of it on a bank holiday. And now I spent the last 24 hours packing up my van ready to leave because I'm leaving after we've recorded this. So on holiday, I'm holiday mode. Not that I haven't been on holiday mode this week. So I did do one small translation job. Travelling back from the UK by train was seamless, absolutely seamless. And the only sadness to me was that I couldn't bring a suitcase full of chutney back. How about you, Stephen? Got back from London okay?
Got back from London okay, and I then headed out at the end of the week to the middle of nowhere. I am currently sitting in a field in Herefordshire.
Right, I must take a picture of you, because you're actually wrapped up. What temperature did you say it was?
7 degrees.
Oh, yeah, Stephen's semi-outside recording at 7 degrees. I'll take a photograph, 1, 2, 3. There we are. I'll put that on the Facebook page later on. You do look nice and cosy in your coat.
Yes, it's not too bad. It was chucking it down yesterday. I pitched my new tent for the first time in the rain.
In the pouring rain.
I think I made a reasonable job of it. And it was warm inside last night.
Warm and dry.
Yes, dry inside, wet outside. I'm here with about a dozen people, mostly university friends, some of whom I haven't seen for 35 years.
Oh, lovely. What a brilliant thing. I hope you're going to have a really, really lovely weekend. Once this is done and then you spent the day editing, you'll have time to enjoy it, won't you?
Yes, the highlight of the weekend around here, there's a huge sealed knot reenactment event.
That sounds noisy.
The village will be full of roundheads and royalists, and they're camped out somewhere in a field, somewhere between here and the western cider factory, because the other thing about Much Markle is it is the sort of home of Herefordshire cider, with Westerns here and then a whole load of smaller cider producers scattered all round.
Much Marple.
Much Markle.
Markle. All right. I thought I was imagining murders in vicarages, etc.
Not quite. Anyway, that's enough about us. Let's get on to the important bit, which is you, our lovely caller innerers. And after you hear from one Lillian, you're going to hear from another.
Hello, Tiger.
Good morning, Dumpty Dum. It's Lillian here from Middlesbrough again, calling in on Friday morning. I just wanted to first of all say that I was extremely disappointed that the conversation about Corfu was edited out of the omnibus completely. I don't know why they need to do that these days. Perhaps, Stephen, you could shed some light onto why it is they still need to edit the omnibus. Anyway, as far as this week's episodes go, I'm really getting rather tired of the storyline with Alistair and Denise. Come on, guys. Get it sorted, make a decision. Please. It's just dragging on. It really is. Either get with Denise or get with Laura, Alistair, because she sounds a lot more fun, actually, I have to say. And I agree with the comments that I've seen about Denise's laugh. It's horrible, isn't it? She does sound as though she smokes about 60 a day, especially when she laughs. But so the other thing I wanted to say was, in respect of the actual podcast, I thought, and I'll put these on Facebook, I won't take them up as this call, I thought, I'm useless at films as well, so I thought what I would do is come up with some music for Umbridge characters and Umbridge storylines. And the two that I could think of straight off the top of my head were Skater Boy for Jack and Hey Good Looking What You Got Cooking for Henry. Anyway, that's me for this week. I shall get going and speak soon.
Thank you for your call, Lillian. It was great. But I have to say, you're listening to that yesterday morning. I definitely had an earworm for the rest of the day with Hey Good Looking What You Got Cooking somewhere just at the back of my mind the whole time. Now, I don't agree with you about the Alistair and Denise storyline. I know a lot of people on our Facebook page are saying, oh, no, God, let them get on with it. Or why are they messing around? Blah, blah, blah. But in fact, for me, it's quite like it. I think if you were going to be having an affair, which is definitely what it's turning into now because Denise is still married and living with John, I think you would be. I can only imagine that you'd be absolutely thinking about it all the time. Where are we going with this? And it's also a great contrast to the Alice storyline and the Grundy storyline because the Grundy's is, it's not excruciatingly painful like the Alice storyline, but it's definitely making my toes curl. George, oh, we'll get onto that a bit later on. Denise's laugh, do you find it irritating, Stephen?
Not irritating. It's not my favourite. I'm a little bit with Lillian on this one. I think that the storyline is a bit tedious. It's been going on for a while and I constantly feel like shouting, just get on with it. But
no, I don't
may be
know.
Unfair. But I agree with you that that along with the Grundy storyline, the Buttleby stuff, and the Chelsea stuff, that's all light-hearted and so forth. And I think that's setting us up for what's going to be a pretty grim focus on the Alice storyline that kicked off on Friday.
Yeah, let's not speculate too much about that because it's just makes me shudder. Now, the one thing in contrast to the Alice storyline about that evening, they drank a bottle of wine and then they opened a second bottle of wine and we heard it glugging. Thumbs up to the Foley people because they've definitely got glugging down to a fine art. But he said, I can't drive over anywhere now. I've had too much wine. Obviously, so had she. So what was going to happen then? What happened after she decided that? Did she drive home drunk? I don't know. I was very concerned about that. It was a cliffhanger that I couldn't cope with. I wanted to know, where did she actually sleep and did she drive home drunk?
Could always have got a taxi, I suppose.
Oh, you see, yes, because you live in a civilised place, you think of taxis. We don't have taxis here. So you have to call somebody,
Rex.
Call a friend. Yeah, there's Rex, of course. Does he still drive taxis? We heard Rex mentioned this week, didn't we?
Yeah.
But we haven't heard from him for ages. I know somebody will be able to tell us how long, but...
No, he's away with some friend or other looking after the pigs at Lower Loxley.
Yeah, which were rather rampant, which was an amusing sideline.
Yes, I did want to pick up on Lillian's point about the omnibus and the cut of the coffee stuff. I don't know why, because as far as I can see, there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to fit all six episodes in full in there. That was the whole point of making it an hour and 15 minutes when they moved to six episodes. So I don't know what happened to that.
No, it was a weird cut then. I didn't notice, to be honest. By the time we got to the omnibus on Sunday, I'd listened through twice and we'd recorded the podcast. So I took the opportunity to take a walk during the omnibus.
Yep.
But that's just me being a bit overarched, I think. There we go. And Lillian's music. Did you go with Skater Boy and Hey Good Looking? What you got cooking?
Oh, the one I thought of was for Joy, Here Comes the Sun.
Oh, yeah. That is absolutely perfect. Oh, my goodness. I'm going to have another earworm today. I hope you've now passed that on to lots of Dumpty Dummers tomorrow morning.
Right. Shall we move on to our next call? And this one also has a musical touch to it, and it's from Marie.
Hello, Jacqueline, Stephen, all dumdy-dummers. It's Marie from Winchester. Just a few things to touch on today. First of all, it was lovely to meet fellow dumdy-dummers at the conference last week and the meal out. It was great fun. Really enjoyed myself, met some amazingly lovely people and made some new friends. And yeah, it was brilliant. Absolutely lovely. And hope to go again next year. Good thing, this whole Bartleby and his voice. He shouldn't sound like Oliver, should he? I mean, why would he sound like Oliver? If anything, he should sound like Joe. You know, Joe Grundy type voice. That would suit him much better, I think. And thirdly, the whole scene with Alistair and Denise on Wednesday night's episode. They were having a conversation. It was a relatively normal conversation about Alistair living with Jim, but they took it to a whole new level because they started playing Rachmaninoff's Concerto in C, which is a very passionate and romantic piece of music used in many films. And you were talking about films last week. Used in a beautiful 1945 Brief Encounter, which was about forbidden love and an affair. So all of a sudden, this sort of conversation made the actors sound like they were talking on a film, and very cleverly chosen by the scriptwriters. I really enjoyed that, actually, and it's the sort of thing I noticed being a musician. So love that. Anyway, take care. Have a good week. Lots of love. And bye for now.
Thank you for that call, Marie. And it was fantastic to meet you at the conference on Saturday. But it was a real pity that you couldn't stay for the Sunday part of the conference, because the very last paper on Sunday covers exactly what you've just been talking about in terms of the music. And there are a couple of things there. The first is that none of the music used is by accident. And so there's no way, as you say, that they wouldn't have known what they were doing by playing the Brief Encounter music in the background when Alistair was talking to Denise. And they've used music before, and there was a crucial moment when Helen and Lee were finally getting together, and then the music came on, which was the same music that had been in the background when Rob had raped Helen, and that caused Helen to panic and close up and be unable to go on with the romantic moment with Lee. Sadly, one of the things that came out in that talk was that the BBC have cut their budget for using licensed music in the show, and they're using library music much more now. And so anything in the way of popular music is unlikely to get that for the time being until they've got the budget expanded again. And so I think classical music, there are probably royalty-free versions of quite a lot of classical repertoire pieces, which allows them to be used. But otherwise, we're going to get stuff that sounds like popular music but is actually written to be there for background music and is something with no royalties and so forth. I think that's going to be disappointing because it's going to limit their ability to do exactly the sort of thing that you like listening to so much.
Yeah, it was great. Even I recognised that piece of music as from Brief Encounter. I wouldn't have been able to say that it was Rachmaninoff, but I definitely recognise it as from an illicit love scene from a fabulous film. Yeah, a very clever choice. About Bartleby, should he be sounding like Oliver Posh or should he be sounding rustic like Joe? Tend to agree with Marie that perhaps, but maybe his voice, Joe's voice, would be too like Eddie's voice. It's about Eddie doing a very different voice. But yeah, I think Bartleby, a nice country horse, would be a pony. What is he? Pony?
He's a pony.
A pony would be much more Joe-like than Oliver-like, but that doesn't give Eddie the scope, does it?
No. So I think that with a name like Bartleby, it's hard to tell, of course, because the only Bartleby most of us know is from the story Bartleby the Scrivener.
Indeed.
And I'm not sure we know what his voice was like in that one.
No, I can't imagine. I have to think very hard about that one. We'll come back to you on that next week on that one, Stephen.
Okay. Next up, we have a call from Glyn.
Hello, Dumpty-Dum. It's Glyn here calling in on a wet Friday afternoon. Things seem to be brewing up for tonight's episode, but this call will be an Alice-free zone. However, it's not a Grundy-free zone because I want to comment on Thursday's episode when we had the scenes with Eddie, William and George, which in a few minutes seemed almost to encapsulate the entire history of the Grundy family in Ambridge, with Will looking on somewhat despairingly as his father yet again tried out a slightly dodgy and amateurish scheme. And his son seemed to have equally unrealistic hopes of making money from a somewhat unlikely prospect of monetizing the Bartleby videos on TikTok or wherever it was. And for the first time in quite some time, Will seemed to be acting sensibly and making sensible comments. And I think it was very interesting when he made his suggestion to George that George should buy something nice for Emma out of the money he was making. And George's reaction to that was clearly not very promising. Well, we'll await for whatever is going to happen in the other story. And I shall wish everybody a good week in Ambridge. Stay safe, everybody, and speak to you again soon. Bye.
Thanks for that, Glyn. Thank you for making it an Alice-free zone. I thought you were joking, though, when you said the story brewing up. I thought that was a bit relevant to Alice's story. Yeah, dodgy Eddie and unrealistic George. I agree with you completely on those things. But George's behaviour, it grates on my nerves, George. And the way he spoke to everybody, his anger. In fact, he took hold of a hammer to bash up the booth and had to be stopped by Will and Eddie. It's just out of control, that lad. But I have to question your assessment of Will being sensible.
I thought he wasn't so much... Well, he was quite sensible. He was trying to strike a balance between the two of them.
Yeah.
So I think he was being a mediator and a peacemaker. And I think that by his own standards, he was being pretty decent.
Than normal.
Yes. We have to deal with the other big issue about Will during the week, which was the fleeces and T-shirts.
Yeah, they haven't dealt with that well, and it's going to end in tears, isn't it?
Yes.
She hasn't shown them to Ed.
No, and it just demonstrates that they have not had a proper conversation amongst themselves about all these arrangements.
Yeah.
You can see that brewing as a major flashpoint.
Yeah, we said that a few weeks ago, didn't we, that they need to have this conversation and quickly. And they never had. I enjoyed the scenes with Chelsea and Emma and the fact that Chelsea was teasing her about them being orange. But in fact, I think orange is fairly obligatory for tree surgeons and people working out in the open. Here, if you do anything, even I wear an orange high-vis jacket when I walk in the forest. That's mainly against the hunters, but danger. My dogs wear orange as well. So I didn't find the orange shocking. It's the fact that he's decided on the name. He's produced the T-shirts and the things. Oh, Emma's embarrassment when he brought the subject up on the meal at Grey Gables. It was palpable.
Yes.
A good story, a good part of the week, I felt that.
We'll move on now to our next call, which I think is a bit Emmery, and it comes from Emma in Poland.
Hi, it's Emma, calling from Poland, where it has been a 5-day weekend, so I've had a chance to catch up with This Week on the Archers. I found most of this week to be a bit unbelievable. Denise still not speaking to her husband and instead sneaking round to Alistair's because Jim had set up a love nest for the night seems odd. It's not as though her child is too young to understand or cope with his parents breaking up. Also, the Chelsea and Robert interaction didn't really ring true. But the most unbelievable character this week was Jakob. He's always been one for sticking to the rules and doing the correct thing. Even though addicts can be manipulative, I have to stand with Brian, something I don't often do, and question Jakob's intelligence. He knew he should have told Kate, and it seems out of character for him not to do that. And would Brian and Kate really not get Alice home as quickly as possible when they realised she was drunk? Would the opinion of fellow quizzed in the bull really have meant that much to them that they wouldn't take her home? The person I felt most affinity for this week was Miranda, who handled the evening as well as she could have, I think, quite elegantly. Looks like next week will be dramatic.
Thank you for that call, Emma. And yes, I think next week will be very dramatic. I think we're going to be set up for some major crisis. They've been trailing that on radio, so I don't think that this is going to end quietly. But maybe at least we've got the consolation that it'll blow up into a crisis and it will end and we will be able to get away from that storyline because it's one that has been going on for quite a long time. And
yeah.
the introduction of Harry and all of that sort of stuff. But yeah. I guess it's realistic. They had to show Alice falling off from the path because otherwise it would not have been realistic. Almost nobody makes it through from their first go at rehab.
Without a fall.
To long-term sobriety. So that, you know, there's bound to be a slip, and I guess that's what we're seeing. And we're going to be seeing it fairly intensely, I think.
Yeah, it's very, very well written, extremely well acted. Holly Chapman, the actor that plays Alice, she's playing a blinder. Absolutely fantastic portrayal of someone with addiction and the desperation, the nastiness that can come out when she's drunk. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Right. But I don't agree with Emma about Jacob. I felt that he was absolutely manipulated by Alice. He knows the story, but he's not lived through her addiction the first time round, the previous part of the story that we lived with her. He's not used to dealing with an addict. Addicts can be incredibly cunning. I've not lived with a person with an alcohol problem, but drugs. And dealing with my daughter going through a drug addiction, she was so cunning, so lying, and so easy to believe because you want, as a mum, as a family member, you believe that they're trying as hard as you are. But that's not the case. So I think Alice manipulated Jacob. And as Sue said in her roundup, she so hadn't talked to Lisa, but he believed her. And Alice said to him, "You don't want to worry, Kate. It's just a blip. It's just a blip." But he kept on it, didn't he? He kept going back to her, checking up on her. She spotted it and was quite, I felt a bit harsh with him because it was kindly meant. But yeah, I don't agree. I think that Jacob, we should go easy on him. I thought Brian was totally out of order.
I agree that Brian was over the top in terms of Jacob. I think that he'll probably get over it. I think he'll realise just how difficult it is to deal with somebody in the grip of addiction. And yeah, I think that's repairable, that damage. But
let's not talk too much about don't get ahead of ourselves because we have a very good Bryony call soon.
In that case, let's move on to our next call, which I think is the Bryony call. It's from Jonah.
Hello, everyone at Dumpty Dum. This is Jonah. After Friday's episode, just a few thoughts on Brian. Now, I would say I have very low expectations of Brian based on his history, but he absolutely took the biscuit tonight. First of all, he takes up with Miranda, a woman who his wife, who's just died, her beloved sister and probably best friend Lillian can't stand her. And Brian, instead of trying to smooth this over, treats it as a big joke. He's demonstrated tonight that he has no understanding of Alice's alcoholism and he's made no attempt to understand it. And he can only understand things in terms of finding someone to blame. So he blames Jacob today. But if Jacob hadn't been there to blame, he probably would have blamed Harry. And he just seems to have no understanding. That's not going to help Alice. His understanding was, Alice is an alcoholic. He's paid an arm and a leg to send her to rehab. She came out, right, job done, she's fine now. And clearly to everyone who's got any life experience, it really doesn't work like that. But Brian has a history of being an absolute arsehole. He's a thoroughly nasty piece of work. But a lot of listeners seem to like him because he has a smooth, posh way of talking. And to be honest, that way of talking just puts me off him even more.
Well, Jonah, I have to say 90% of your call was exactly what I thought after having heard Friday evening as well. Yeah, Brian bashing. I think we should go for it now. There's so many people who love Brian. He's a great character. He's a great actor. But I don't like the character. I love the way he's acted. I just think he comes across really well. But I don't agree about the voice thing. I don't find he's got a smooth voice, a posh voice, whatever. That doesn't matter. Everybody's voices are different. We've all got different ways of speaking. But it's a good character portrayal. But Brian and his blaming and not understand the alcoholism. Yeah, Brian's always fixed things by throwing money at it. And that's what he's thought. I thought it'd all be fixed. It was all very hunky-dory. Alice is going along. The setup with Chris and Martha, the co-parenting is working very well. She's occupied at the stables. It's one of those things he can just park and move on with his life. So, yeah, good, very, very good and on-point call late last night, Jonah. Thank you very much.
I agree with you, Jacqueline. Brian he's a very complicated character. I think, as you say, he's been played brilliantly for 50 years now. And so there's a huge amount of nuance in there. but it's not all wonderful. And yes, he's got a particular worldview that he applies all the time. And part of that is, as you say, money buying everything. But it's all, there's a simple answer to everything. And the fact is, there really isn't.
No, it's very black and white with Brian.
Those are the first few calls. There are more to come, and we'll hear them very soon. And if you'd like to join us by calling in yourself or dropping us a line by message or email, Jacqueline is here to tell you how, and all the details will also be in the show notes.
Yes, the first option is to record a message or a plot prediction by going to www.speakpipe.com/dumtdum. The next option is to send us a voice note or a message via WhatsApp on 07810012881. Or +44 and remove that first zero if you're calling from outside the UK. Please keep your call to a maximum of 2 minutes. Or finally, we have an email address you can contact us on if you would rather write to us with your views, maximum of 250 words, please. The email address is dumtdum@mail.com. Do bear in mind you need to be at least 18 to contribute.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Let's get back to our calls. And next up is Melly.
Hello, Jacqueline and Stephen and all Dumpty Dummers everywhere. But particularly the ones that I got to meet this time last week while we were enjoying a rather splendid meal. So I've been making some notes throughout the week, which all seem completely irrelevant now, so I wasn't going to call in and talking to another Dumpty Dummer. Having a bit of a rant. I realise I do. Tonight's episode was horrific to listen to. So hard. And you know that there's the whole Harry thing, and we've got the whole Yaffa now in a terrible position. I wonder if anybody's thought, and Stephen, you can correct me on the timeline of this because I'm really not very sure. Alice is still grieving her mum, and she's not been able to grieve without the additional pressure of managing her addiction. And now we've got Brian, quite frankly, flaunting Miranda. That's a lot to deal with. I don't ever think there's one trigger. I think it's all cumulative. So Alice has had a lot of other people's emotions and her own emotions to deal with in the last little while. Feel for her. I do feel for her. Yes, I know. Fictitious character. But what road are they going to go down? Is Harry a red herring? When actually it's about her nasal grief. I don't know. But just a wee thought before I pop myself off to bed because I have to go to work tomorrow. Okay, everybody. Bye-bye. Cheerio.
Thank you for that call, Melly. And yes, it was good to meet you in London last weekend. And that was a very good meal in the Italian restaurant that we went to. Now, Alice and the things that are impacting her at the moment. Yes, she lost her mother, what was that, just over a year ago, a bit more than a year ago.
Yeah, a bit over a year, I think, yeah.
And so she's dealing with that. And she's got various problems. But at the end of the day, she is an addict and everything is now focused on herself, I think. And looking at that sort of thing as an external cause is probably not the place to go. She needs to look inside at herself and she needs to think about what's ahead rather than what's behind her and focus on why she needs to stay sober. the most obvious reason being for Martha. But also, I think, just generally, she has got a bright future ahead of her if she can get on top of this. And she was doing that quite well. And the fake advice, the advice that she claimed that Lisa had given her when she told people that she told the cop that she'd spoken to Lisa, was actually, I think, quite good advice. It's probably advice that she's been given before when she's wobbled and nearly had a drink. And it is to think about what she's achieved and to realise that maybe she can do it. And I hope to treat this incident, serious though it was, as something that she'll just have to get over. People will realise that it's a result of her being an addict. So if she can get over it, they will largely forgive her for it. If she doesn't get over it, then it's the first part of a sort of destruction of her character and destruction of all the love that is around her.
Yeah, and that's what happens, as we've seen with Harry and his relationship with his family. Eventually, the addiction destroys the relationship with many members of the family and your entourage, all the people around you, the people you work with. How much can the staff, Joanna at the stables, take from somebody who's obviously drunk in charge of horses? I agree with Melly very much that we're beginning to see that Harry was a red herring. He was a reason for her to go off the rails. He was a reason for her to be stressed, to be put into a situation of stress, because she thought she was ready to. She'd given a lot of thought and a lot of herself into having a new relationship. She questioned it at every moment. She decided to go for it. And there we are. It's all falling apart. It's all fallen apart. So I think she's also always constantly got Chris on her shoulder, her conscience, because of Martha, understandably. But Chris is not the most sympathetic person. So I think that's also part of her panicking. But I can only imagine if you're an addict, you're in a spiral and the spiral goes downwards and you can't bring yourself out of it. It must be absolutely terrible. I found it grueling Friday evening hearing her in the pub. I hated her lying to Jakob in the week. Yeah, it's been a very hard listen this week. And as you say, I think it's going to get worse.
Yeah, but it's the brilliance of the acting, as you mentioned before, Holly Chapman in particular, that is making it such compelling listening.
Yeah, it is. Thank you so much for your call, Melly. And yes, it was brilliant meeting you last week. And not only did we have a brilliant Italian restaurant that evening, we had a fabulous Indian, didn't we, on the Friday night.
Yes, excellent. A vegetarian Indian at Ravi Shankar. Kate would have approved of that place.
Yes, she would. I approved of it. It was lovely.
We will now have a call from Richard, which is, I think, less Aliceful.
Richard calling in from Lisbon. I think that Eddie knows more about commercialising on land traffic than George. It's very hard to make lots of money out of traffic. I'm not sure what sort of people George thinks he's going to influence and be able to charge people to access that audience. I'm wondering how members of the public got to hear where Bartleby the horse is and how much longer it'll be before Mia or other people in the village start worrying about Bartleby's welfare. Hapless vet has already wondered about his welfare. Anyway, I think that Eddie's going to make more money out of Bartleby than George. Selling people a talking horse is a good idea. It was a fairly difficult Friday evening. Sorry, I'm calling in on Friday evening. I feel very sorry for everyone connected to Alice once again. And I wonder how much longer Miranda's going to stick around. Or perhaps she's going to backpedal, having seen how Lillian was actually quite decent and well-behaved in the context of Alice's decline and fall. I think that's all I've got to say. Thanks for doing the podcast. Usually I run right up to the minute, but yeah, just keep up the good work, and let's hope the next week's a little less depressing than this one. Bye.
Thanks for that, Richard. Yes, let's talk about Bartleby's welfare. I'm surprised that Mia hasn't got in on the act already, talking about monetizing Bartleby. But I think it's coming. This all started because George was convinced that Bartleby was the oldest pony. I think, yeah, that's going to be a thing. He's going to die. Bartleby's going to die and that'll be the end of it all. I don't understand how George thinks that he's monetizing everything, but I don't understand quite how those kind of things work on the internet. I kind of ignore it as much as I can. And I think Eddie's just trying to make a quick buck, as he always does. The point about Miranda, it'll either, having seen the Aldridges in action around Alice, and Miranda very, very, I thought, excellent withdrawal back to Banbury on a Friday night, mid-evening, when she was expecting to stay overnight. thought that was a great move on her part. It'll either make her want to be more involved with Brian because she saw him as a caring, loving family man and she liked that. And also she likes winding up Lillian, or else she'll just run for the hills. Who knows?
It's definitely hard to tell. On the point about monetizing Bartleby, I think George is convinced that he's onto something because there was this influencer who commented or reposted or did something in connection with one of his, maybe just liked one of his Bartleby videos. And as a result, there was a surge of views, which led to George getting some advertising money, which he has used begrudgingly to take his parents out to a meal at Grey Gables. I think that's likely to be a one-off. And as you say, if Bartleby does die or for some reason they become unable to carry on those videos, then George is going to be in a deep hole. He's going to have staked everything on that. And he's got nowhere else to go. So I think that's going to be a bit of an interesting line. And I hope maybe some light relief from the other storyline that's going to be dominating what we're doing.
I did love the way that Emma said to George, but you're an entrepreneur. With a very strange way of saying entrepreneur. Influencer, mother, influencer. And the difference between an influencer and an entrepreneur is definitely in George's mind. So it's the influencing more than the entrepreneurial skills, I think, that are in George's way of looking at things. But some very good points from Richard there. I think we've got our last call now.
Yes, our final call is from Gillian.
Hi, I'm Gillian. I'm a first-time caller in RA. And I want to say first, my heart goes out to Alice and to Jacob. And I want to call in with a plot prediction that Ezra and her family are moving to Beechwood. When she said about moving to Beechwood, she used the word we. Is it Ezra and her husband? Is she moving with children? Is she moving with parents or other family members? And I feel that her moving to Beechwood and moving to Ambridge is part of Adil coming back. And my prediction is that Roy is going to resign as the hotel manager at Grey Gables and that Adil will actually move to Ambridge and become the hotel manager. I know he's a project manager at the moment, but he's going to become a hotel manager and that he will move to Ambridge. And I believe that he'll move into Green Acres with Jim and Alistair and become part of the Ambridge crew.
Thank you for that call, Gillian. And it was lovely to meet you too last weekend. You came up and introduced yourself to me and to Jacqueline. And it was great to be able to put a face and a voice to what had been, I think, just a Facebook group member. So it was really good to meet you in real life and to talk to you during the weekend. An interesting plot prediction. I was struck when Ezra said we, because all we'd really heard about her was her. And she hadn't mentioned any sort of family. But I guess that means she's got a husband. She's got a different surname from Adil.
Yeah, but I think she has mentioned her husband in the past. I think she's mentioned children in the past. I have a vague idea that she talked about the children, at least a boy. Maybe I've dreamt all that, but you're much better at facts than I am. So probably if you think she hasn't, she probably hasn't. Well, but as far as I'm concerned, she's a family woman.
Yes, I imagine that the Beechwood house she was looking at was one that was occupied by a couple. It's certainly big enough for more than one person, but we don't know how big it was. And I don't think we know whether that couple had children or not. They weren't mentioned.
No, they were definite strangers on their way out of the door, weren't they?
So, yes.
I have to say that I think the plot prediction that Adil will come back is great. And I think, yes, Roy resigning and Adil taking over as hotel manager is a possibility if we think that Adil's got those skills. Not that we've seen those skills much. That might be a way of moving Roy following the death of Ian Pepperell out of the area. But Roy's a fixture in Ambridge, so I don't think he will disappear.
I don't think Roy will disappear because it turned out how useful he was as a character, as a foil for other characters, storylines and so forth. And so he gives depth to what we understand about Kirsty because we can have scenes with Kirsty and Roy. And Roy is a bit of a cipher himself, an Aston Villa fan, works at Grey Gables, but there's not that much more to him than that.
Dating apps.
And all the dating apps. But all of that was able to develop Kirsty, Phoebe, other characters around him. So it would be a pity if he were to go. And I do wonder how willing Oliver would be to have Adil back.
Yeah, he's been really dropped in it, hasn't he? So I think it's a very good idea, Gillian, to, I think Azra being there means that we will have Ardil back and around because she's quite protective of her brother. She's older than him, isn't she? So we'll definitely hear of Ardil, but whether he comes back as a permanent fixture is another question. And I definitely don't see him sharing with Alistair and Jim. I think that's a real flight of fancy. Sorry.
Well, it's an interesting idea anyway. But the thing about plot predictions is we just have to wait and see whether they come out or whether...
Yeah, but we love them. You know, we love them.
Absolutely. We're very keen on plot predictions. So thank you very much indeed for that, Gillian. Those are our calls. Thank you so much for calling in. We love them. Do call again next week. And if you haven't called in before, be like Gillian and become a first-time caller in RA. Now, did we receive any emails or WhatsApp messages this week?
Yes, we received an email from Chris with the subject line, a vet, a brat, and a horse. And it goes like this. Jacqueline, Stephen, fellow dum-de-dummers, greetings. Well, this was just a weird week in Ambridge. Robert and Jim seemed to be on the verge of beginning a romance at Ambridge Hall with talks of sleepovers and comfortable beds and up all nights. But instead of getting an octogenarian tale of coming out, we learned that Jim was giving his son space to commit adultery with a tiresome Denise. Denise decided she didn't want to relax, is the word they're using, at Jim's house, but that she knew just the place for her and Alistair to be more comfortable, or whatever euphemism they're using for adultery. Meanwhile, we're still not clear on why she won't speak to her husband about ending the marriage, or for that matter, what has happened to Paul. Twice this week, people have mentioned Paul, and no one seems to know where he is. Are we waiting for some big reveal? Does Bartleby know? And what the hell was Thursday's episode about? Linda and Eddie make a great, if weird, team trying to help George, who is stomping around throwing tantrums while Eddie or Will, I can't tell those two idiots apart, try to make peace instead of smacking George on the side of the head. The Grundys are a mess, and I am Chris in Indiana.
Thank you for that email, Chris. I wanted to pick up on one thing which we haven't really spoken about at all that you mentioned, and that's Robert and Jim and what you described as the beginning of a romance at Ambridge Hall. But it's actually it's this medieval mystery thing that Robert is working on. And I'd been wondering what it was. But I was tipped off by Sally Cadle on, I think it was on the Academic Archers Facebook group, who thinks that it is a book called Cain's Jawbone, which was written in the 1930s by Torquemada, who was a crossword compiler, crossword setter. And this was a puzzle. And it's an incredibly hard puzzle. It's a book that has been recently republished. I think it was published about 5 years ago by Unbound, which is an appropriate publisher because it is literally unbound. It's, I think, 100 pages or something like that. And they're not bound together and there are no numbers on them. And the question is, what order do they come in? They tell a story. You have to work out the order of the pages. And then once you've worked out the order of the pages, you need to work out who the killer was in the murder mystery, identify the various protagonists. And it was published originally with a prize, can't remember how much, not a huge prize, but there was a prize for the first person to solve it. And the republished version also had a prize for the first person to solve it, who turned out to be John Finnemore, the comedian behind Cabin Pressure. He said, "If only there was a period when I was stuck at home for 6 months with nothing to do and nowhere to go, then I might be able to concentrate on and solve this." And then COVID came along. He was locked down, so he did it during lockdown.
Ah, fabulous. Now, Jim and Robert have form. They've always had this rivalry over twitching. They had a massive argument and a cheating thing, didn't they, going on a few years ago, which was highly amusing to all involved.
That was on their birding list, wasn't it?
Their birding list, that's right. The how many and who and what they'd seen and where and everything. It was actually quite amusing at the time, I felt. But they have a good relationship. So, in fact, I've enjoyed the fact that Robert and Jim are going to collaborate on this puzzle. I feel that it was very contrived that Jim would go and stay overnight because, famously, he doesn't like going anywhere other than his own bed. They've made that very clear in the past, so it was weird. But we know why, because he wanted to give Alistair a chance to get at Denise in a more private setting. But I still don't actually believe that Jim, the Jim we know and love would have done that. I think he would be slightly more sensorial about it for plot lines and plot moving things on. And as you say, maybe it is best for the sanity of lots of Dumpty Dummers that the plot of Denise and Alyssa does move on. Yeah, but they do have history. I don't think it's a coming out story though, Chris. That's a good fight to fancy.
Thank you for that, Chris. Now, those of you who are Patreon backers may have noticed that in addition to the regular weekly newsletter, we published an ad-free version of the podcast in our Patreon feed. It didn't come out until shortly after the regular version arrived, but we're planning in future to release the ad-free Patreon version at around the same time or possibly even earlier than the regular version. We're still getting used to the way Patreon publishes podcasts, which is why it came out in a Dumpty Dum Extra feed rather than in the main Dumpty Dum feed. But it should be possible for you to go to patreon.com and get a link for a private feed of the podcast that you can paste into whichever podcatcher you use so that you will be able to listen to it alongside any other podcasts.
I'm also starting to organise a few extras to be offered to Patreons, starting with additional newsletters to our regular newsletter with a slightly different take on the week in Ambridge. So by signing up, you'll have access to them. This is all very new to us. We've only taken over the Patreon in the last few weeks. Neither of us really know what we're doing. Luckily, we've got some help from several people behind the scenes. But so it's a learning curve. Bear with us. But if you want to get in there and get these extras, as they're coming up, Patreon's the place to go.
And it's worth noting that any money from Patreon goes into a fund for Dumpty Dum, which will allow us, for instance, to cover the costs of the subscription for the virtual studio we use to record and the various other software licenses that we use. And we also hope that if we're saving up a bit, we'll be able to use it to help pay for a Dumpty Dum get-together or future Dumpty Dum get-togethers. And where those are happening, Patreons will have priority booking and will be able to book in advance of everybody else. So there are real benefits from it, or there will be as we just get used to all of this.
As we get ourselves organised and learn. Bear with us.
Let's move on to Facebook, where we have lots of lovely, busy, friendly and thought-provoking members. And we need to give a very warm welcome to the newest of you, who are Jenny Story, Jane Lothian, Denise Ganley, Amanda Craik, Paul Rogers, Laura Sue Moss, Leslie Skinner, Catherine Simons,
Marion Harrington, Duncan Franklin, Sonia Berluski Weber, Trish Ferguson J, Rebecca Rendell, Harriet Zoe, Catherine Humphreys, and Helen Parkin. So shall we hear what our Facebook group has been talking about this week from Rob?
Hello all. Welcome to another roundup of what we've all been talking about on the Facebook pages this last week. Chelsea had decided on which job to take and was applying her orangery skills to get the tea room table turnover up a notch. However, as Ray Miller said, I know Chelsea is supposed to be a strong-spirited person who is go-ahead, dynamic and full of confidence, but that was awful, and she is being arrogant, conceited and arrogant about her abilities, on top of gobby. Whilst we're talking of the younger generation, Louise Lawton posted a link to The Guardian. It was an interview with Arthur Hughes, who plays Rory, talking about playing the title role in the new Disney Plus series, Shardlake. But, as Witherspoon said, watch the first two episodes tonight. I don't think we'll be hearing Arthur Hughes again as Rory after this star turn. And it felt like there was a Lewis Carroll theme going on. First up was Alistair and Denise through the looking glass. On one side of the mirror was Alison G with, "Oh, for God's sake, Alistair, just grow a pair and get on with it. This is getting to be so boring." Meanwhile, on the other side, Darcy Jorgensen came back with, "Can we please cut Alistair and Denise some slack? Jeepers creepers, let those of a certain age, with pain and discouragement and disappointment raking their hearts, have some hope. We creak, we are afraid, and the light we see ahead of us is more likely imagined to be a locomotive. Please allow us some hope." And then we have Alice in Wonderland. Glenys Goodwell noted, "I think Alice was lying when she told Jacob that she had rung Lisa. And the little come-ons in next week's Radio Times aren't helping. Sounds as if something big's going to happen." And Charlie Bird came back with, "Surely Jacob has to tell Kate. There is no way he's going to manage to bluff his way through it for starters." Obviously, it went from bad to worse, and Friday saw the whole family finding out. Jonah Titchmarsh said, "Not sure how Lillian wouldn't have noticed the state Alice was in from where she was reading the questions out. Good it has come out, but not sure Alice would have drunk this way yet. Brian is absolutely hopeless at dealing with this." And Chris Gibson agreed with the last point. "Chill out, Brian. Jacob didn't make your child an alcoholic." But the week wasn't all doom and gloom. We had a moment of light relief thanks to Paul Norris's observation. The discussion with Linda around Bartleby clearly gives us a new verb declension. I observe village life. You gossip. She spreads scurrilous rumours about people. Anyway, apparently, thanks Pam, there is a trailer doing the rounds of Radio 4 which promises that the Alice storyline is going to be much more prominent. Can't wait to see what everybody has to say about it all. Laters.
Thank you, Rob, and thank you so much to everyone on the Dumpty Dum Facebook group. If you'd like to join them, please do, but don't forget to answer the very easy membership questions so that we know that you're a real person. Now to Twitter, where you will find us at Dumpty Dum. Make sure you include the Archers hashtag using a capital T and A, so the visually impaired who use screen readers can enjoy any Archers-based tweets. And as well as at Dumpty Dum, I can occasionally be found at Wenlock House.
And we both can also be found following the Archers on Blue Sky, where I am at jberto.bsky.social.
And I am at wenlock.bsky.social. So let's find out who won the Twitter medals this week.
Tweet, tweet, pushcat. Or should that be XX these days?
Hello, Jacqueline, Stephen, and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Purple Pumpkin here with Tweets and Skeets of the Week. And my thanks as ever to Kate, Bernadette, Jen, Glyn, and everyone who tags at Dumpty Dum to make sure we see all the best ones. This week on Twitter and Blue Sky, there was a lot of speculation about how exactly Alice would get her comeuppance, whether Jacob would be held responsible, and why, oh why, we were being treated to so much nonsense about Bartleby and the Grundys. There was also a lot of commentary on why we were being given so many trailers for the Friday episode, an approach that hasn't really been seen since the peak of the Helen and Rob storyline. Over on Blue Sky, I enjoyed a discussion about Mick's surname. According to Brenda Selwyn, at brendaselwyn.bsky.social, Mick has now been given a rather odd surname in the upcoming cast list, usually a sign the person is becoming a regular character. MD, at md05.bsky.social, pointed out that in a behind-the-scenes clip of Ryland's visit, around the time of the last Eurovision, Mick was given the surname Conrad, although that never made it to the credits. But now he's become Fadmore. Finton the Wrong, at fintontwrong.bsky.social, concluded that they've decided to make Mick a hobbit because Fadmore is an anagram of Am Frodo. But now to this week's medals for Blue Sky Skeets and X Posts, all of which we continue to consider as Tweets of the Week. In bronze position, it's romantic writer at Corinthia Hart. Am I the only person who wanted to hear a witty, scholarly and erudite episode in which Robert and Jim worked out the puzzle that Linda bought Robert for Christmas? The silver medalist is regular tweeter Ian at Kernow27. Will can get the family some branded sweatshirts. Utter Equine Bollocks, Inc. And the gold medal goes to Sarah at Sarah Duggars. So everyone in Ambridge is just fine with Alistair and Denise having an affair because she simply doesn't really like her normal nice husband, despite the fact that she can't even pronounce Alistair's name, which she says constantly. And on that disbelieving note, that's it for this week. I hope to see you all on hashtag The Archers on Twitter or Blue Sky next week.
Thank you for that, Theo, and congratulations to all who are mentioned in this week's roundup. And don't forget, we are on Instagram, at Dumpty Dum, where plans are at foot to do a little more.
Indeed they are. We will be back again next week and recording at the crack of dawn Saturday morning when Stephen will be back at home with Tangle and I shall be out in the wilds of France. So please get your calls in by midnight on Friday, UK time, as usual. And as we come to the end of this episode, we need to say thanks to all our wonderful contributors and to the team of Dumpty Dummers behind the scenes and to all those we had the chance to meet last week in London. And we need to say a great big thank you to all of you who are listening to us too. We love making this podcast despite the technical problems from time to time and sharing our love of the Archers around the world.
And we must say thank you to Kim Durham and Sonny Ormond for their voices and our podcasting parents, Lucy V. Freeman and Royfield Brown.
Thank you so much for listening to all of this and joining us today. We're now off to enjoy our decaf, alcohol-free Irish coffees with plant cream. So it's au revoir from me.
And it's goodbye from me. Dumpty, 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 dum. Dumpty, dumpty, da, da. Dumpty, 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 dum. Dumpty, diddly, dum. Dumpty, diddly, dumpty, diddly, dumpty, diddly, dum. Dumpty, 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 dum. Dumpty, diddly, dum.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.